This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC, brought to you by The Athletic UK. I mean, our boys in white were well and truly caught out on the beach yesterday afternoon after being welcomed onto the field by a guard of honour by the Sheffield United players. That was about as hospitable as the hosts got all afternoon. It was a 4-0 defeat at Bramall Lane as a ruthless Sheffield capitalised on those championship celebration hangovers, score three goals in the opening 25 minutes and totally blow us away. Ender Stevens tapped in to make it four after the restart to book the Blades a playoff spot. Despite the result, the atmosphere was brilliant in the weigh-in yesterday. Many dug out the Hawaiian shirts and the inflatables. It was party time at Bramall Lane. But to many, this isn't the way that we wanted to end the season. And perhaps a sobering reminder of how much Fulham needs to improve if we are to stay in the Premier League next year. So here for me for the final Monday podcast of the year is Jack Kelly. How are you doing this morning?
Very well. How are you?
I'm good, man. And Dan Cook, how are you?
I feel absolutely atrocious, Coops.
Well, you look $1 million, sir. So
I do not.
Right, we'll take what we can get. Jack, I believe you prepared some three-word reviews. Would you mind kicking it off?
Well, I prepared one of my own, which was Marco Silva out, but we'll move on. Nate Scott with Oh No Anyways, which is a favourite. The Magic Mod with No One Cares. Richard Bamber, of course, with Goal Difference Dented. Stephen Sheldrake with We're Still Drunk. And my favourite, this is absolutely sensational, from Fulham Home Runs at Fulham H20. Paintball over points.
Deary me. Jack, Fulham's 4-0 loss against Sheffield United was the heaviest defeat by a title-winning team in their final league game of the season in the Football League since Newport County lost 5-0 to Southend United in the final game of the 1938-39 season in the Third Division South. You know when you're pulling stats out and you're going back to the 30s, like this just doesn't happen. Whether or not you care about the result, this isn't really the way that we wanted to end the season, is it, Jack?
No, not at all. Very much a case of taking the gloss off what has been a remarkable season. But I mean, I think context is important for this game. Marco Silva literally did tell the players to celebrate promotion and the championship title. So whether they just overdid it on the celebrations is probably quite evident there. But look, this is a Sheffield United team who, I look at the Derby game and I think this is similar in the fact that they needed to win more than we did for the state of their season. Obviously, it didn't work out for Derby in hindsight, but for Sheffield United, they had to win to get into the playoffs. And actually, first 10 minutes, we were really good and actually finding a lot of space around the box and carved a couple of opportunities. But, you know, once the first goal went in, Sheffield United got their tails up and played some really good stuff and went 3-0 up after about 25 minutes and blew us away, like you said. And this is our heaviest defeat of the season. And it's very ironic it comes at a time where we're already champions, after one of our heaviest wins of the season in 7-0 for the third time. But yeah, disappointing, but literally shrugging my shoulders going, roll on the summer and roll on the Premier League. It really doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, one of the things that I was talking, I've got a good friend who's a Wolves fan, and that Wolves team that got promoted the season, the 17-18 season, they were like one of the best teams in recent memory for me in the Championship, that Wolves side. But no one remembers the fact that they lost 3-0 on the final day of the season to bottom of the league Sunderland. And it just sort of shows, you know, these things happen. And whilst it was really frustrating in the away end, no one's going to remember the season for that game. It's just one of those, we park it, we move on. And that was a Sunderland team who had nothing to play for. Yesterday mattered to Sheffield United and it showed. And we just got rolled over.
It's just a reminder of how batshit a league the Championship is. The fact that we could go from a 7-0, you know, victory to losing 4-0 consecutive games. It's just crazy. It really is. I mean, Dan, Fulham effectively had a second choice team out yesterday. You had Gazza coming in goal. Michael Hector coming in for Tosin and Chalobah playing. But Chalobah obviously got subbed off due to injury fairly early on. But I mean, Gazza and Hector hardly covered themselves in glory yesterday, did they?
No, I think this is partially when you talk about like the concept of match sharpness, match fitness. You saw the effects of it on Saturday. You saw two players who had not played any competitive football for months, and it just showed. Like Gazza, he just looked wobbly. I think it was that the first goal was really weird and all. I don't know how it goes in and why it goes in, but he just seems to leave it. And I think in those moments, keepers are so confidence-based that he just seemed very wobbly for the rest of the game. I felt bad for him because it's just not quite worked for him this season. And then, we were speaking about Michael Hector before we started recording. It was really, really bad. Like really bad. If you watch back all of the goals, his positioning is just looks like a man who just was not just off the pace, like physically, but mentally. Like he wasn't able to track runs. It was difficult because Ndi and Morgan Gibbs-White are two very mobile, non-traditional forwards because they're both players who have sort of been converted into playing up top for Sheffield United. And they made it really awkward. Their movement was good. They're very sharp. But Michael Hector just couldn't handle it. And I think that's where we saw the impact. One of the things that I always push is that centre-backs are only ever as good as the worst centre-back. So I think one of the things that's really helped Tim Ream this season is being next to Tosin, who's a fantastic centre-back, and they've sort of leveled up to each other. But Hector's performance yesterday really dragged Tim Ream down as well. And we just looked awful at the back.
It's mad to think how only two seasons ago, you know, when Hector came in January due to that weird contract, he basically made our season, and the partnership that he formed with Tim Ream, you know, played a big part in us going up that year. And then, yeah, it's a sad thing because I like him. He seems like a nice guy to have in the dressing room and a popular player. But I mean, it's just, I don't think we'll be seeing him next year in a Fulham shirt playing in the Premier League. But yeah, we shall see, I guess. Jack, it was a nice touch from Sheffield welcoming us onto the field with the Guard of Honour. It's a beautiful stadium, Bramall Lane. And despite the result, the day in general was pretty good fun. You know, the travelling away fans made the best of it. And I mean, despite the result, it was a pretty top day all in all. I thought the concourse action at half time and before the game was up there with the best I've seen all season. Yeah, I'd like to think it was a pretty good day overall, despite the result. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that whatever would have happened, whatever the result, we could have been losing 10-0 at halftime, and the concourse probably would have been in the same sort of scenes because, you know, we are champions and this is one last chance to all come together and celebrate the fact that we have achieved the title this season. So fans were down there from probably about minute 30, probably celebrating upon each other's shoulders with the pyro and everything. I personally didn't go down because I had such a massive bag that I was like, I'm just going to look after it, just sit in the stands. However, I did have a very, very nice chicken balti pie. That was delicious. I would give that as one of the best pies I've had all season. I actually felt a bit like Don Betts yesterday. I missed two of the goals. The first one, I was just looking down at my phone, wasn't really paying attention to the game. And the second, I was off getting a pie and they made it 2-0. But yeah, all in all, I hope the Fulham fans, you know, when they were dressed up and singing songs at halftime, had a good day out. And in the second half, when things were very tedious and the game wasn't up to much, we were basically relaying through all the songs we've sung since about 14-15. So we were singing things like Slavisa Had a Dream to Build a Football Team. We had an embargo, but we signed the players on loan. We're shit at the back with Ross in attack. We're Fulham FC. Run away back. So it was all good fun. And I think we just, you know, we sort of knew that we were going to lose the game. We just wanted to have as much fun as we possibly could before heading back to London.
I think there's a potential future Fulhamish segment there in Jack's top 10 pies of the season, where you take us through the grounds of the UK and who does the best pie. But I mean, a particular shout out, I really, really enjoyed the "we've got the ball, we've got the ball" for the last 10 minutes of the game. We've lost the ball. I could see even the Sheffield fans enjoying that one. I think they even joined in at one point as well.
Yeah.
Which is a first. I mean, Dan, let's not lose sight of the fact that Sheffield were great yesterday. You know, they came out with an intensity of a team that needed to win the game. And I think on balance, I'd say they're probably the second best team in the division. I'd back them to beat Bournemouth in their current form any day of the week. They faced Nottingham Forest in the playoffs. Bookies have them as favourites now, I believe. You must fancy them, surely.
It's an interesting one. I think because of the way results went on Saturday, you have it now where I think the two best teams in the playoffs are playing each other in the semi-final, which makes it really interesting. It almost works better in a way because over two legs, it really does become like a on merit getting to the final. It's not, when it's a one game shootout, you can lose that sort of balance. Anything can happen. But I think Sheffield United against Forest over two legs can be really interesting. I think that Sheffield United are going to be taking momentum into it, which is really important. I think Forest is still just going to be sitting in those moments thinking, you know, what if we'd have just beaten Bournemouth? And then, or if they hadn't have lost away at Luton a few games previously. So I think they're on a slightly downward trajectory, Forest, and have finished quite meekly. And so, yeah, Sheffield United, buoyant, going in. They've got their fans back in the ground, back on board. They're looking lively. I think it should be a really, really good playoff campaign.
I mean, looking at these playoffs, like, how nice is it not to be involved with that? You got a real feeling of smugness, you know. It's great. Let's savour that feeling. I mean, you said that who you fancy. Who would you actually like to see go up? I'm going to throw this to both of you. If you were to pick your four, because I've been speaking, I think we were chatting when we were up in Sheffield yesterday about there's pros and cons to everyone. Like, if Sheffield go up, you've got, you know, beautiful grounds, very good team, play decent football. Nottingham Forest, he's got the history, but it will just turn into an absolute Premier League wank fest because they'll be like, oh, you know, back where they belong and all that kind of stuff. Luton, it'd be very entertaining to see Luton. You know, there's a lot of pros and cons for each, but each of you, if you had to choose one, who would you like to see in the Premier League next year?
I think I was talking, literally had the exact same conversation with someone on the way back from the ground yesterday, and we took it from two points of view. We took it from a narrative point of view and a selfish point of view, i.e. Fulham, what would be best for Fulham. And from a selfish point of view, I would say Luton, because obviously they've got the worst budget, they've got the weakest team, they're the underdogs, although it'd be fantastic to see, it'd be a great story for them to go up. Like, it'd be fantastic to watch. They would benefit us hugely because they would be one of the weakest teams on paper we've seen in the Premier League of all time. And that's no disrespect to Luton. That's just realistically, they're punching above their weight. And it's a remarkable achievement what Nathan Jones has managed to do for them this season. And from a narrative point of view, I don't necessarily think that the Nottingham Forest Wankfest is going to be as bad as it was for Leeds. But I do think it will be quite unbearable. But I'd sort of like to see them back because I really do like Steve Cooper as a manager. And I think that his stock will rise if he gets a promotion, especially after taking them from being in the relegation zone to where they finished fourth in the table. So fantastic from him. Huddersfield would be interesting because, you know, Corberan, a little bit of an underdog story this season. I actually personally predicted them to go down, which is a terrible take. And then, of course, you've got the other team in Sheffield United who were there last year, might bounce back again. So two of the three relegated teams are promoted back to the Premier League. That would be quite boring for the neutral point of view, but you've got to give them credit. Any team deserves credit getting promoted. But yeah, for me, it'll be Luton, hopefully, but I wouldn't mind seeing Nottingham Forest.
I think I'll temper what I said earlier as well, Coops, that whilst I think Sheffield United have gone into this in a really good run, I still think that Huddersfield would be my favourites for this playoff. I genuinely think that the way they play, the way that Corbrand's very astute in what he does, he's very good at analysing how opposition teams play and changing how they play based on that. And so I think they're a very dangerous team to be playing in the playoffs. Who would I like to go up? I agree with Jack. My whole mantra at the moment is make the Premier League as weak as possible. And that means that means relegating the strongest team. So that third relegation spot in the Premier League has to be who we think is going to be the strongest team next season. So relegate them, and promote who you think will be the weakest, and I think that's Luton. I wouldn't like Sheffield United to get promoted, because then it justifies them sacking Slavisa, and that still bothers me slightly. And it may be wrong, but in my head, I think Sheffield United would be exactly where they are right now if they'd have kept Slavisa. I think he'd have turned it around, but it vilifies the decision if they go up.
Bro, I think that's a different level to the narrative arc there that I hadn't thought about. But that's really funny. It's like a kind of the opposite of what Trump said. Let's make the Premier League weak again. we should get that printed on some t-shirts, yeah. I think, before going in. Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting. It would be great to see it play out, and very nice to watch from a distance. I just want to go back to the game yesterday quickly, Jack. I mean, we lost 4-0. I don't want to dish out too much criticism, because there's not really much point, to be honest. Because we're up, we're champions. Let's just enjoy it while the sun's out. But Seri, I thought, was just absolutely diabolical yesterday. Obviously the slip for the goal was unfortunate, but then just as non-existent. I think he must have enjoyed himself paintballing a little bit too much. I just wanted to take a positive, really. Did anyone impress you at all as having a good game, or is it just a game to put behind us and forget about?
I'd say Carvalho on his last game was probably a brightest spark. He had a good chance, which was well saved by the keeper. In the first half, Bobby Deacord over Reed on the right-hand side was okay, got it behind a couple of times. I think we really missed Harry Wilson. He wasn't involved whatsoever for some reason or another. But and then Rodrigo Muniz came in and he put himself about a little bit. When he came on, he had a header saved by the keeper. In terms of positives, though, there wasn't much to choose from. But Carvalho on his last game for Fulham, coming over to the fans, that was all quite nice. And yeah, he's a talented player, Carvalho, and he'll be sorely missed. And he's going to be such a hard position to try and replicate for next season. Hopefully we can get the business done early and get sorted for next season. But I just want to say good luck to Carvalho at Liverpool. Enjoy the money. No, I'm only joking.
He's cynic.
I've loved him this season. He's been fantastic. And without him, we wouldn't be where we are. So you've got to give credit to him.
Absolutely. It's just been glorious to watch. He's a very, elegant and majestic footballer. And he said some comments a few weeks ago that I know we've spoken about the pod, a little flirt that he is, saying, oh, I'm not going to say goodbye just yet because you never know what's going to happen and stuff. He's just like, you tease. Dan, I mean, he looked visibly emotional at the full-time whistle yesterday. You see tears coming down his face. It was nice to see that we weren't just a complete stepping stone on his journey to football stardom. Do you think there's any chance that we could see him back next year, or are we torturing ourselves like the kid at school musing over the girl that he can never get? Because yeah, she's well out of our league.
I think we've got to accept it now. I think that ship has sailed. And I think one of the things that Marco said yesterday cemented it was that it wasn't just that he was leaving. The quote was, he won't be in a Fulham shirt next year. And that was a definitive. And I think so that's... And whether that comes down to the rules, the Premier League rules, or whether it just comes down to Fulham thinking, maybe this is the best idea anyway, that if he's going to go, he goes, and we focus on trying to replace him short-term and long-term, as opposed to trying to plug that gap just for next season. But yeah, I just, again, echoing what Jack said, it's been an absolute pleasure to watch him play. I have no doubts that he cares about this club and he loves the fans. And I think my dad said it yesterday. He said, I hope he knows what he's doing. He doesn't come to regret this decision going to Liverpool. But I don't think this is something that he's made this snap decision of like, yeah, I'm going for the money, I'm going now. Because it's clearly taken the whole season. It's been something that's been dragged out. Or rumours say that in January it didn't happen because he had doubts about it at the time. It felt rushed. So I think this is a man who's really thought about it. He really does love this club, but has just finally come to the decision after weighing it all up that this is the right time for him to move on. And all the best to him, because I would love to see him do well.
Yeah, and that 20% sell-on clause is looking quite enticing if he does do well as well.
I was just going to quickly say, if you look back at all the youth players who have left us over the years, Pat Roberts, Moussa Dembélé, etc., I think Harvey Elliott, if you look at the Fabio Carvalho situation, I think there's more reason for him to leave. And I say that because apparently he's already completed his medical for Liverpool. He went to the training ground, met Jurgen Klopp. And I reckon Jurgen Klopp has probably spoke to him and gone, look, we're in a transitional period right now in our midfield where we've got the likes of Fabinho, Henderson, Naby Keita, and all the others. And James Milner is probably going to, you know, maybe move on at some point. And actually, we're seeing like a new breed of Liverpool midfield now coming in. Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott. And these are players who aren't playing bit part. They're actually, you know, Champions League starters and cup starters and play, you know, minutes in the league. So Carvalho is probably looking at that and going, I genuinely feel like I could play top tier, you know, not like starting every week, but definitely play his part in a squad next season for Liverpool. And I think that's probably what's convinced him, because he would have had reservations about going so early in his career based on the fact that he won't get many minutes. But based on what Jurgen Klopp's trying to do with that Liverpool midfield and how he's transitioning it into more youthful like lineups, I would say that Carvalho is going to get more than plenty minutes next season, which is good news for him.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way anyway. And yeah, I mean, all that's left to do is thank him for what he's done for us and wish him all the best, I suppose. Final Monday pod of the season, boys. And what a season it's been. It's just absolutely crazy. 11 times this year that we've scored four or more goals in a game. That I just can't remember anything like it. It's been utterly joyous. What? Just quickly off the top of your domes, sorry, I've thrown this on you a little bit, but what's been your highlight of the season in terms of what we've achieved?
If you would say what was my favourite game, I would say Middlesbrough away. That was something of the most special sort of moment for me, was seeing Mitrovic score that goal and the unity that we showed in that moment, because it's been a season when we've gone out and we have whopped teams and then we've gone to a really hostile place against a team that were fighting to get in the playoffs, and ultimately we ended up their playoff dreams. We started their downslide then, and it was just a special day. But in terms of what will I remember this season for, it will always be Luton at home last Monday. I'll never forget that day. I'll never forget any of the goals. I'll never forget any of the celebrations. It was just special. And not many teams can have a day as special as that, I don't think.
Yeah, this season's been so unique in so many different ways. Luton is the most unforgettable night I will ever experience at Fulham for a long, long time. Then you look at Huddersfield away, first away game back after COVID. And we scored five goals and played the likes of Anguissa and Seri at the John Smith Stadium. But for me, I have to say that this season's been all about unity and it's been about togetherness. So when we beat Millwall 3-0 and all the players came over to Paul Parish's seat, was for me the most emotional and just unbelievable moment of the season. Such a terrible thing to happen at the Blackpool game, and the way in which the players responded in front of the Hammersmith End after a really good 3-0 win meant a lot to obviously Paul's family and the whole fan base. And it just is testament to Marco Silva and the man he is and the squad that we have. It was absolutely beautiful.
I'm very lucky to support this football club. And yeah, the season will live long in the memory for every supporter there is out there. And it's been a pleasure to be on the podcast with you boys for this season. And let's hope that we can we can fill next year with some laughs as well, despite the fact that it's probably not going to be as plain sailing. But right, that's it for this section. Don't go anywhere, because we'll be back with some of your listener questions.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Right, welcome back. It's the Fulhamish podcast. I'm joined by Jack Kelly and Dan Cook. We've got some of your listener questions now, so thank you for everyone who got in touch. I'm going to throw this one to you, Jack, because Dan, you kind of just answered it from your point of view, but this is from Nathan Tambini from our Telegram chat. What was the most important win of the season for you? So Dan, obviously you just said that the Middlesbrough game. I think I'd probably echo that. But he's changing his mind. Dan,
that was my favourite moment sort of in terms of like in terms of nature of win. So I've got two and for me that they come earlier in the season, and I think it's all about context that surrounds games. So first one, QPR at home. We had two wins from our last six games. The game before QPR at home was the 4-1 up at Coventry. We had an international break. Things looked a little bit ropey. You know, we weren't in a good space. We knew we were a good team, but we weren't necessarily getting the results to show it at quite an important time of sort of early season form. We went 1-0 up, and then Lyndon Dykes gets that equaliser, and suddenly we're starting to worry. We're like, this could be a tough season. And then we go out, we beat them, we put three past them in the last 25 minutes of the game, and that started a seven-game winning streak. So I think for me, that was a really important game. And secondly, Reading away, because obviously we won 7-0, but again, we hadn't won a game in five. We'd scored three goals in those five games. We had that long COVID break when we played no games at the back end of December and the start of January. And teams started to go above us. I'm pretty sure at one point we were below Blackburn. I mean, we can see where they are now, but there were questions being asked because form had been bad. Other teams were picking up lots of points. We go out, we win 7-0. It kickstarts that bonkers January where we then go and win 6-2 twice in a row. So I think those are two sort of games when we arrested a slide and we really actually just made a marker of like, hang on, we are serious.
Yeah, those games are very important actually in the context were defining in terms of how we kickstarted, you know, because the QPR game, we went 7 wins in a row after that. And then you know what happened after Reading, but I look back at some of those 1-0 wins, especially the one at Hull, you know, dogged pitch, rubbish game, one moment of quality, 3 points, happy days, good night, God bless. It was, and then again, like the Cardiff game as well, big, big results that gritty. And you need that side. Yeah, we've been quite sexy in our football this season with lots of goals, but you do need to have the other side to you. I say it every season, the Championship team needs to have two sides to get over the line. And we showed that resilience in those 1-0 wins. Obviously the Peterborough game as well. So yeah, for me, Hull away was very, very important and very satisfying as well.
Right, I've got another question here. Dan, this one's for you. This is from Keir on Twitter. Is anyone else worried that we're still a massive confidence team? If we score early, things go well. Anything can happen. But if a team is aggressive and gets to us early, we struggle to fight back, which will happen in the Premier League. Do we need a midfield enforcer or something? As if a midfield enforcer is the key to becoming a confidence team. But what do you reckon on this question, Dan?
I think a lot of teams are like this. I think it's easy when you're inside it, seeing, you know, oh, we very rarely win when we go behind. But Chris Frank, Cottage Analytical on Twitter, did a great thread on this, that really we sit about par. In general, if you go behind in games, teams tend not to win. That goes for a lot of teams. And there are obviously some teams that are actually have the knack and they're really good at it. But I would much rather be a team, I think, that frequently goes ahead and is good at holding leads than a team who needs to go 1 or 2 nil down until they're kicked into gear. So whilst, you know, next season we are going to need to show this side to us that we can't afford to not win any games when we go behind. But I think it's also one of those things that actually it seems worse than it is, because actually when you look at what other teams do, it's very similar across the board. It's hard to win games of football when you go 1-0 down.
Yeah, true. I agree. And yeah, sometimes I think we can be a little bit hard on ourselves as a fan base and attribute that at, you know, to Fulham, but it's not always the case, is it? Jack, we've had a question here from Dave M on Twitter. He says, lots of varying opinions about how many players we need to sign to stay in the Prem next year. However, what are your top three positions that we should focus on?
Okay, well, first of all, centre-back is definitely the most important. You look at Michael Hector, you look at Alfie Morse and Tim Ream. These are players who one might be here next season. Maybe all of them will not be here next season. Terence Gongolo is still in a state of, you know, can play one game every 7 years. I think two centre-backs is needed for Fulham, two quality Premier League centre-backs. But then it gets interesting, because there's been a lot of chat recently about, are we going to stick with the same formation for next season, i.e. the 4-3-3, i.e. the number 10 position, or are we going to have a base midfield of just three midfielders? And one that's not attacking. So we've got two holding and one sitting, basically. No, sorry, like an eight and like a six and two eights, basically, as opposed to an 8-6 and a 10. So then it comes down to the Fabio Carvalho position. Like, do we need to actually replace it? So I'd say another midfielder is important. It just depends on what the system is, what the style is, and how we go about signing one of those players. And then you'd look at wing back, left back, I think. Robinson was good last season. Joe Bryan, is he going to have another shot at it? Not sure. Is Nico Williams coming back? We've got Kenny Tete. So for me, you know, to answer the question, centre back, centre mid / cam and left back.
What do you reckon, Dan?
I think the one thing I want to pick up on what Jack said, and it's something that I think strongly is about this Fabio Carvalho replacement, is that I really do imagine that we will turn into a midfield. And we've played it a number of times this season as well. But with one midfielder sitting in front of the back four and then two sitting in front. So as you say, you've got the two eights. And so I think it's really important that replacing Fabio Carvalho with a really quality box-to-box midfielder. If we can find a player who can affect the game in both areas, both halves of the pitch, someone who's got just that knack for goal, you know, pick chip in with a few goals across the season, but really does all of their work in between the boxes, I think that's the most important, other than the centre-back. If we get that right, then I think we'll have a really nicely balanced side.
Have you got anyone in mind who'd fit that mould that you think we should perhaps be looking in for? Because that kind of footballer is like gold dust at the minute. And there's not too many of them around, especially not within the budgets that we're likely going to be looking at.
Yeah, maybe someone like Andre Frank Zaboenguisa.
I'm thinking that. It's this never-ending debate, isn't it, about Andre Frank Zaboenguisa? But I mean, God knows whether we'll see him next year.
No,
I wouldn't be against it if he comes in and, you know, actually wants to play for the club. And you know, I'm all for it. Like, believe me, I want to see him do well as well. I just can't see it happening. He just doesn't seem committed to me.
Napoli will exercise that option to buy him. But I think if I was to describe to people, if people want an idea of what I and a few of the other Fulhamish people have thought is the mold of player we need, if you just look at Conor Gallagher, if we can find ourselves someone in the Conor Gallagher mold, that's what we need, I think. He's had a fantastic season and we won't be able to get him, but that's the style of player that we need to be looking for, I think.
100%. Jack, we've got a question from M on Twitter. Was that Ream's last game for us? Technically, yes, but should he get a contract extension? And if not, will he beat Adoy's record for fastest forever Fulham being awarded? So there's quite a lot there to unpick. I mean, yeah, I would love to see him play on as stay on as a kind of like maybe like a player coach kind of role. You know, the transition that we saw sort of Parker make. I'm not saying that Tim Ream's going to go on to become our manager, but I'd definitely like to see him continue on at Fulham. He seems like such a good role model to the rest of the squad, and obviously a big character, and he would be very sad to see him go. But you know, this sort of thing happens in football, and sometimes you've just got to, you know, accept when the end is the end. But do you think he'll stay on, or do you think he's going? And if he's going, surely he'll be nailed on for a Forever Fulham award.
Yeah, no, there's quite a lot to unpack here, because I was looking at his body language yesterday at full time, and because it was Fabio's last game for definite, I was sort of like, is this Reams as well? And like, how are we going to, you know, are we going to give them both a good old send off? And I couldn't quite tell. I wasn't quite sure as to whether it was or not. Was he saying goodbye or was he not? I would like to see Tim Ream working alongside Stuart Gray next season in the defensive tactical things of Fulham in the training ground at Motspur Park. And the reason I say that is because I was very lazy and was like, oh yeah, he should just go to MLS for one more year to see out his career. When actually, if you look about it objectively, his family's here, he's settled in London. Why would he want to move to MLS for 1 year for a payout, for a one last payday? Doesn't really make sense. The kids are in school. It would be silly. And then you think about, you know, is he going to play next season? Not really. I don't think so. As much as I love him, as much as he's a club legend, I think at the age of 35, he's not going to be starting Premier League games for us in a season where we really do need to stay up and cement our place in the Premier League. So that's where my conclusion is that I think he should be in and around the club as a defensive coach, working alongside Stuart Gray or the academy, doing his UEFA FA coaching badges, and see where his career goes from there. Obviously, I don't know him personally. I don't know what decision he wants to do, what decision he wants to make, but I would like to see him in and around the club for the foreseeable future. And yes, in terms of Forever Fulham, I would be more than happy to see him, you know, at Southampton away on the opening day at halftime, getting the Forever Fulham award, because he will be Forever Fulham. He's an absolute legend.
Too right.
I genuinely think he might be staying, because and this might be looking too deep into it, but I think that if he was leaving, Monday at home to Luton was the perfect moment in that game for Marco to sub him off with 5 or 10 minutes left to get a full standing ovation, his moment at home, his last time in front of the fans. And he did it for Fabio Carvalho with a substitution that didn't need to be made. He just brought Neeskens Cabano on with 10 to go. And that was, to me, very much a signal of, like, say goodbye to Fabio. But Tim Ream hasn't had that moment at any point. You know, he started every game. He wasn't subbed off in either of the last two. And I think you just see it in those moments. You would expect a manager to sub that man off so that he could get his last moment with the fans. And because he hasn't done that, part of me thinks that I think he might have 1 year. And yeah, we might not see him play very much, but I think that's not the worst thing in the world, because I think you can still contribute so much off the pitch.
Yeah. Too right. I mean, I'd love to see him stay, but only time will tell, I guess. Right, we've got one last question from Colm Bolger. Should we ban paintballing from being a team bonding exercise at the club? Joke, obviously. But what has been the funny highlight of the season? Mine was when the Fulham coaches playing keepy ups on the sideline at QPR. I grin every time I see it again. Mine would have to be Mitro's goal against Huddersfield. It's a fairly obvious shout, but, you know, it was just hilarious. Goal of the season, without a doubt. Any other moments that spring to mind, gents?
I think Luton at home, when a fan managed to kick the ball all the way up onto the gantry, was really funny, because Luton had a throw in. They need to get on the game. I think the score was like 1 or 2 nil at the time. And it was just very unnecessary, but also really funny. The way he executed that shot, and it landed right up the top. And it was, it was good value.
Dan, anything that springs to mind?
I quite also enjoyed Rodrigo Muniz busting out moves on the Ewood Park dance floor when he scored. I think that was a lovely, lovely moment. I will enjoy that moment. That was seeing Rodrigo Muniz do his best impression on the touchline there. That was wonderful.
Yeah. Also, special mention for Muniz, every single bicycle kick attempt that he's done this year. Just always, I can't believe every time I see him doing it, I'm like, he's done it again. And one of these days, he's going to land one. And when that happens, it'll be absolute scenes. We're in the Thames, I think. But anyway, gents, thank you so much for for being, you know, a bit of a group therapy. Well, no, not group therapy. It's a celebration. You know, yeah. We're up. The boys are up. It's going to be a fantastic year next year, whatever we've got in store. And yeah, it's been a pleasure watching with you boys this season. The only thing that's left to do now on the final Monday pod of the year is to name the pod. So Jack, would you mind doing the honours?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go with Fulham home runs with paintball over points, just because obviously the paintball was the main, you know, activity they did after clinching the title, and it very much did affect the performance on Saturday. So yeah, fantastic. Paintball over points.
Good. For any listeners who weren't aware prior to listening to this podcast of the paintballing shenanigans, this one might be a bit of a head scratcher, but we'll go with paintball over points. All that's left for me to do is to thank my panelists today. Dan Cook, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Coops, and thanks for listening, folks.
Yeah, and Jack Kelly, thank you.
Thank you, Coops. Cheers.
One final note from me, just thank you to, you know, all the listeners for sticking with us this year, and yeah, I very much look forward to being with you next year. Come on, you guys.